Hello, and welcome back to a new episode of AI for Morale Ridders. Well, as you notice, I'm speaking in English, and this is because my guest will be, well, not English, but he will speak English. And sometimes to get the best experts from all around the world, or in this case, at TU Delft, you will have to speak in English. And I am speaking with an amazing expert. I'm speaking with Luciano Siebert today. He is an assistant professor on responsible AI at TU Delft. Luciano was a postdoc at TU Delft's AI Tech Initiative on Meaningful Human Control over AI Systems. And that is a topic we're going to talk about today. The central question will be, how can humans remain in control of AI, of artificial intelligence? As you will notice, Luciano emphasizes meaningful human control. Whatever that means, you will hear in the rest of the podcast. But I started asking Luciano about his bachelor degree in mechatronics and his master in electrical engineering. And what kind of people are these engineers? And are they fit to design our future? Okay, have fun.
I think in broadly speaking, in engineering disciplines, there is a lot of technical solutionism, in the sense that we want to give the solution, but we don't even know the problems sometimes. So what are we really trying to solve? Are we just really trying to solve, to develop something because it's cool?
And those people are going to design technology as well, and they are going to make a role in our society.
Yeah, exactly. We also, as educators, as society, we're also learning how to deal with this and how to educate this. So there's also a lot of developments at UDelf and also at many other universities also here in the Netherlands in trying to incorporate all these kind of questions and reflections in the curriculum also. So here are the metrics for fairness when you design AI systems. Now, how do you think about fairness? Why should you care about fairness? And what is the impact of discrimination? What should you care about this? Because we can just easily say, no, I'm just designing an algorithm. That's not my problem. But I mean, how we can develop engineers that can think about innovation in a responsible way.
So, as Luciano says, we need engineers that think and reflect about responsible and fair technology. Engineers that not only develop the next face recognition software, ChatGPT version or fraud detection system, but understand what the effect is on society. What we want as humans, apparently, is to have some control over this technology. Which brings us to our central question. How do humans remain in control of artificial intelligence? I ask Luciano what happens if we don't stay in control.
This whole idea, this whole discussion about meaningful human control over AI systems, actually it started some 10 years ago, I don't remember exactly, but it's like it was started with discussion about autonomous weapon systems. So that's not was really not a discussion on computer science, on AI, not specifically on development, but was a lot regarding to
I always think government. About Kilo drones is always the first thing that comes to mind with me.
Yeah, that was
okay.
Falls within this category in this realm. So all, right. It was basically about weapons that could have some kind of automated targeting and engaging process. So they could kill people.
Autonomously, they can decide themselves maybe if they kill someone.
Exactly, that was something that that reached these huge campaigns about stop killer robots, and I do completely support this idea of engagement. But more than this, there was this NGO called Article 36, which they also proposed the term meaningful human control of autonomous weapon systems. And the idea there is that how we can keep human control of such systems that have some automation automated procedures happening there. So basically, they try to look into this in the aspects of also a lot in respect of responsibility, because you don't want to say, okay, if there's you use such similar weapons, doesn't need to be fully automated. There's a whole spectrum there. But you say, no, I mean, who killed this person? There's some causalities. What happened here? And it's not enough to say, okay, the algorithm decided to do this.
No, it's not enough to say that the drone
computer says
decided.
No, computer says yes.
Because we can put a drone inside jail and then have some kind of idea of...
Exactly.
Just this.
So the discussion was any level of automation these weapons should do, they should do this in a way that people take responsibility for the outcomes and they can and they will take responsibility.
Is that related to the word meaningful? Because that seems to be a part of the human control, right? You always say meaningful human control.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you say that meaningful? Why not just human control?
Yeah. So the meaningful there, in my view, it also relates to the fact that once things get a little bit more distance in terms of operational control, so let's say even if you have a car you're steering, like the traditional manual vehicles, right? Or your bicycle, let's keep it there. I mean, if you steer it in a direction, it should go in that direction. If you steer in the other direction, it should go in the other direction. But AI systems, especially with learning capabilities, they have some automated and autonomous capabilities there that are gonna do something. Once you start this, they can go in a different direction, which you expect.
Like the drone searches for a target by itself, for example.
Exactly. And even if it gives you the possibility to say yes or no, there's some questions if that is, I mean, I don't think that's even that way it would be enough to have. So have a human in the loop in these circumstances is not enough to have that you have human control.
So the human in the loop is this also this sentence that you hear a lot.
Yeah.
And it means that in the end, the human pushes the button, right? It's in the loop of the final control, of the final commitment to killing someone.
Yeah, exactly. Let's say this algorithm goes there, process like huge amounts of data and gives you, hey, this is the target you should engage, or this is the an aspect you should take care. This is the person who should get a loan, or this or that. And there is a lot of discussion and claims that say, okay, but the algorithm is not making a decision. It's a person there. The person is making the decision. But the meaningful discussion here, the meaningful human control, says it's not enough to have a human in the loop, just to have a human pushing the button saying yes or no.
Okay, that's interesting. Why is it not enough?
Because it's also regarding the conditions to take this decision for responsibility. So if you're doing this kind of decisions, let's say if the machines have a reasonably good accuracy, whatever that means in a specific context, so you might get desensitized in analyzing this very carefully. So you're gonna get like, you're gonna say yes, yeah, no, then after a week or so you stop taking so much good care of this. So
the human loses its humanity. When you use the technology, you're going to get a perspective of the technology, and that perspective of the technology might not incorporate all the human values that you think are interesting.
Yeah. So this meaningful human control, it really relates to being responsive, not only to operational control, but being responsive to human reasons. And then the reasons you can probe can be values, that are defined norms, can be legal standards.
Nice. So let's go to one of the other examples that I saw in the paper, the AI hiring system.
Yeah.
Can you explain the case, take us with us, and take us exactly to the point where it might be problematic?
There is a lot of things one can do, for example, screening, initial screening of resumes.
Okay, so people send resumes, there's like thousands of them, and a company wants to filter.
And this algorithm can take this, so there's already some discussion, because you can use like the resumes from people that are already employed, that you already recruited in the past, as some training data set, and then you can try to use this as a way to predict who are good, who is bad. But more than this, there are also companies that have proposed in the past also to use, for example, on interviews, facial recognition in order to define if you're trustworthy or not, so all this kind of thing.
So that's a choice of words, voice tone, to match those to personal traits such as creativity, willingness to learn, and conscientiousness.
Yeah.
That already sounds a bit freaky, right? So you're going to record somebody and you're going to try to predict the personality and the work ethics of that person based on the tone of voice and the facial expression.
Yeah, and then it's a lot of pseudoscience acting that's in the background, and it is really not.
Is that realistic? Is that something that's happening or that we're close to?
There are companies developing this technology. Mm-hmm. One of the biggest players in the market, they even rolled back on this after putting this in the market. There was some backlash, they rolled back.
Wow.
But and that was an interesting case because also the connection to who should be under meaningful human control is also there are many people involved in the system because there's some meaningful human control on the side of the company, maybe the hiring manager. So they want to know that the let's say the principles, the guidelines they have on their in order to hire employees, like the vision on the company somehow respected through these algorithms. You have also maybe the things of the people that are in being interviewed. They also should be entitled to some form of controlling the systems by say, okay, if you are looking at my resume, you're saying that my creativity is 4 out of 10. And if I can see this, can I disagree with this and provide you evidence, additional evidence, why? I don't think that's the case. So there is not, sometimes there's no way to control, to look at this. And there is also...
Because it'd be meaningful controls from the people who are trying to get a job.
Yeah, exactly. So I would say
that... Usually it's not, right? Usually it's very one-directional, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when you try to be efficient and try to kind of filter a lot of resumes.
Yeah.
What is the problem here again? Like, is it that the predictions are sometimes wrong? Is it that we don't know who's responsible in the end?
Yes and yes. That's part like this. Is that this decisions? So that there's a few issues. So one is decisions. They happen not only once. They can happen at scale, systematically, biasing, and they are some decisions that really. Affect a person's life, so basically they are not going to be never going to be able to get a job. So think about some similar algorithm being applied to thousands of companies out there. So maybe someone that has a little bit of different set of skills, they're never going to have the chance to get an interview in order to talk with someone and try to explain why they think that this might be valuable or not,
and they might actually be still a valuable worker.
Yeah, exactly. And also, and I agree also the questions of responsibility, they become very important also.
I think the most media kind of example of what goes wrong here is that the database says that mostly it's men who have some kind of CEO job. So we only look at the resumes of men because AI is trained on a data set with only men.
It's like you reinforce biases because sometimes it's not clear what one might say, okay, there's biases on the society, but doesn't mean that the AI system should reinforce these biases, that we as a society should keep reinforcing those biases. So that's, exactly. So is it following us? Is it being responsive to these values and norms that we want to uphold as society, as companies even also?
Okay, so it's a problem of bias, of false predictions, of uniformity, and of responsibility, actually.
Yeah.
So we come to the word responsible. Responsibility is a word that comes up a lot in AI ethics. Responsibility is about who is legally accountable, but it has a wider meaning. For example, you can hold a colleague responsible when you ask him or her for an explanation of her actions. Like, why did you organize this meeting? In 2004, Matthias introduced the term responsibility gap to refer to situations where it's difficult to ascribe responsibility. It's commonly held that if you want to hold someone responsible, that person needs to have some control over the behavior. Like, if someone becomes sick, you usually don't blame that person. This, of course, becomes increasingly difficult with autonomous systems. Matthias describes situations such as the Mars Pathfinder, or elevator systems that optimize for optimal timing, diagnosis of lung cancers with neural networks. All these kind of technologies hold some degree of autonomy, and therefore the programmer, designer, or operator does not have control and cannot be held responsible. Matthias concludes we should hold the machine itself responsible. I asked Luciano about this. Yeah, that's a term that we hear a lot.
Yeah,
I'm sure you can explain it better than me. What's the responsibility gap?
Yeah, so responsibility gap are these situations where one cannot properly attribute blame or responsibility to a given person or to even people might discuss to a given agent. I mean, there's even people that say you can attribute responsibility to computers, to algorithms and such. But the concept of meaningful human control is very clear that it should never be attributed to computers, to algorithms. And we can attribute this responsibility to humans.
Actually, so that's the starting point of meaningful human control. Exactly. That we should always attribute responsibility to humans.
Yeah, always humans, not computers. They should be responsible. It doesn't matter how many layers, how many algorithms, how many third-party connectors and everything. There should be a person.
Right.
So in the responsibility gaps, which is described as situations which are at least hard to ascribe this responsibility.
Sometimes there's no one to blame, right? Like if some technology malfunctions and no one could reasonably foresee it. I think it happens as well, like if we just have an accident or something, something goes on fire or something. I don't know if I don't think people are immediately put in jail or somebody is held responsible for that.
Yeah.
Or is there?
Yeah, I think it's also, did you follow all the concrete guidelines? Did you put some, did you try to avoid this? Everything? Did you did everything you could? Did you follow all the guidelines? Because I think one thing's, there is this very huge, there's this mindset also in startup, in tech developments, in AI development, that is like, go fast. Build and break things and put them in the systems, but
We're,
societies are not are not like technological experiments. So how you can test this is like an airplane. You're not gonna, okay, I build an airplane, have an idea for a new airplane. Okay, cool. Let's put this 1,000 people, like let's put like 100 people inside and let's go and test it. No, there's a lot of things that happened before it can go to the market. And it still means that accidents still can happen.
And do you feel like with ChatGPT, for example, we should have taken more time to test it before putting it into society?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I expected that.
I think at least we need to understand well what are the use cases in which this should be applicable or not. Because I think it's not only the technology per se of large language models, like all these kind of things, but it's also the hush of being that no company wants to be left behind. So they're going to try to, in the coming years, try to integrate this everywhere.
Yeah.
And it's where this is going to lead us.
So in the rat race of technology advancement, companies push for being the market leader in AI tech. Software like ChatGPT is thrown at us without, as Luciano points out, much of a test period or regulation. However, When it comes to more physical technology, such as self-driving cars, the advancement seems slower than expected. With the help of the internet, I can tell you that since 2015, there are cars that help with parking, keeping distances and steering to stay between white lines on the roads. However, European law says that drivers still need to keep their hands on the steering wheel. There are actually different levels of automation. There's level 0 with no automation, level 1 hands-on or shared control, level 2 hands-off, level 3 eyes-off, level 4 mind-off, and level 5 steering wheel optional, where I assume there's no need for a steering wheel anymore. So the cars that have been approved in the Netherlands since 2015 are mainly level 1 cars, cars with shared control. However, the Netherlands was actually one of the first countries to experiment with two completely autonomous driving shuttle buses in 1999. I guess level 5 cars. Albeit this was in a controlled setting, off the road. Outside the Netherlands, in the US, some level 3 cars, that is, eyes-off cars, have already been legally approved to drive on the public road. I get a bit confused about all this and ask if there are self-driving cars out there in the Netherlands or in the world. Luciano tells me it's no coincidence I get confused. It's actually part of the marketing strategy of the companies that sell self-driving cars.
Where are the automated vehicles? I thought they would be here by now.
Yeah.
But they are still not around.
Depends on how you consider those things.
Okay.
Because there are vehicles with autonomous capabilities out there right now. Of course there is. And if you think like there is, of course, it's it not like the Jetson, the plane that's going to pick you up and things like this. Yes.
But do you mean the ones where the car keeps the car in between the stroked lines at the highway? Mm-hmm. Or do you mean really independent where people are not doing anything anymore? I know there are some tests with that, but I thought they were still not really in general use, even in the Netherlands, or am I mistaken?
Yeah, it's not in general use, fully autonomous vehicles, mm-hmm. because I don't think they really exist. So that's the thing. When you talk about autonomous vehicles, I think there's a lot of marketing there.
Yeah.
What things are advertising, nothing was really happening there. So what is advertised? So it is that companies are talking about self-driving cars, which has a clear connotation of self-driving. The car is driving itself, right?
Yeah.
Which, and if you say if a driver is driving itself, I can just chill out and do nothing. But they say, no. Wait a second. The car is driving itself, but it might not be reliable at all times. So you do need to be paying attention at all times and staying like hours behind the steering wheel, ready to engage at all times.
I see.
We know that's like something that's also when talking about meaningful human control is not a meaningful also expectation of a person to do this. So you will get distracted. You cannot stay behind the steering wheel, cross your arms and wait for hours. You will not be ready to engage in when you need to take over, for example.
Yeah.
So
I'm always out of date, but is this already happening? The cars right now, can they self-drive for hours?
Yeah.
Okay.
Especially on highways, yes.
I don't have a car. I don't even have a license. So maybe I'm just out of date.
Self-driving bicycles, maybe we can.
Yeah, maybe. Okay. And the idea is that the humans just pay attention.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
That's also the whole expectation there. And there's even like some say, okay, and if something happens, you don't take over, it's your problem. So that's something that leads to some even a form of ethical scapegoating. Just say like, okay, we put a person there, and if something happens, it's not my fault. I'm developing these vehicles that, I mean, I'm marketing as self-driving or as autonomous, as a, you name it, as different ways, different companies are going to name them differently. And if something happens, you were responsible. So we build a product, we don't guarantee, but if something happens, it's your fault.
Right, yeah. I can see the problem there. So how would you go about an automatic vehicle case? What would you like to see there?
Yeah. So maybe it's also a good connection we can think about what we try to propose also in our work. About
With the four principles that you proposed.
Yeah, exactly. So this discussion also, the meaningful human control, there was like some discussion first on the on philosophical principles. There was some colleagues also at UDelph, Filippo Santoni and Jeroen van der Hoeve, and they look into this principle of tracking and tracing. So that comes with the theory for action, some other philosophical background there, but it's basically what they say is that for a system to be under meaningful human control, it should be able to track your reasons, your moral reasons, for example. So if you think that this should be the right thing to do, the car should be able to understand this and follow this in a way. And they should be in the tracing condition, that the tracing condition says that there should be always be a way to trace responsibility to a person of a group of persons, of people there. So, but when we start thinking about these concrete cases, it was quite hard for us to understand what tracking and tracing means in practice.
Yeah.
So, and thus we came with this four properties that try to be a little bit more actionable on that.
Yeah. Let me surely recap this tracking and traces. I know you have some example with a thermometer. What's the idea how do you track a thermometer? What is good tracking of a thermometer?
So the idea, the thermometer with respect to temperature, if temperature increases, the mercury column on the thermometer should also increase.
And that's what tracking
means. If temperature
means.
goes down, this should also go down. That's basically, I mean, the basic concept of this.
So the thermometer tracks the temperature.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, right. And similarly, the AI should track our human values. So if our human values differ, the AI should differ.
Which is difficult, right?
It's very much more abstract than the example. And what is the tracing part?
The tracing means that you can relate the outcome, let's say for an automated vehicle, the decision to brake or not to brake in a given circumstance, you can trace this either to the decision of the designer of the algorithm or maybe the decision of the person inside the vehicle to do something about it or the interaction of someone outside the vehicle. So there is also a way you can trace these decisions on these actions in the world to a given more understanding and proper moral understanding of responsibility. So basically, I want to say it's not only about pointing fingers, so this is you are to blame, but also saying that you can trace the behavior of assistance to a proper moral understanding.
Right. So sounds a bit like explainability or transparency or something.
Yeah, so it is, of course, a lot of connection there, but I think it puts a requirement that people should have the ability to understand, to have this proper moral understanding. So just saying like, okay, the vehicle crashed because you did not intervene, but I mean, you had like 0.1 seconds to intervene. Yeah. We know that people cannot intervene in 0.1 seconds. That's kind of the...
Yeah, so that wouldn't be a very moral, meaningful explanation.
Yeah, exactly. You cannot really have an understanding of the situation in such a split second.
Right. Well, we want to go into the four principles, or four properties, I should say, actually, right? The four properties. The first one I have here, we need to define in which moral situations a given AI should or should not be used.
Yeah. So going back to the, I'm going to try to bring the examples back.
Yeah, thanks.
Maybe it makes it a little bit easier. So when you talk about automated vehicles in automated vehicles development, there's a lot about operational design domain. So this is, so basically, maybe this vehicle should be used not in a very rainy situation, only on highways, and maybe there is no traffic jam. There are some situations which the system should or should not be used, which is defined. So we put on top of it is it's not only about the environmental circumstances, but also about like the moral implications of the consequences there. But maybe system should be used or not be used in circumstances, for example, that that don't allow proper reaction time from the drivers. If you take the hiring experiments that don't allow proper fairness evaluation from the hiring manager,
In some, if they get too many applications, they can't really control for fairness, and then maybe they shouldn't use the AI. I think sometimes not using AI is a very, very good thing to think about, and it's the opposite of what you see in, well, in the business world, right? Mm-hmm. We should use AI for everything because, well, it sounds good. Okay, so there are certain situations where you should not use AI, and we should think ahead about if the situations are too morally difficult, maybe.
Yeah, I think it's about defining which situation, not only when you should not, but also the situation you should.
Okay, be more explicit when you should.
More explicit when you should, and which are the constraints. So we understand, of course, that this is not like a black or white. So it's really like a gray area, but how can we do systems that can at least if these things are explicitly defined. So at least if something happens later on, there's an accident might happen, you can say, okay, here is what I tried so far. I tried to map the situations. This came as an accident because we couldn't know about this. And then you can improve. You can do better.
Right.
But if you never pay attention, never try to understand what are the more circumstances that which you should use, so that's just harder.
Yeah, I get that. Okay, the second principle, second property, humans and AI should have some form of basic understanding of each other.
Yeah.
And maybe to recap, we are talking about these four principles that try to make a little bit more precise what it means to be traceable and trackable.
Yeah.
So to have meaningful human control in the end.
Exactly.
Yeah, you're emphasizing the human part in the system,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, as well.
Yeah.
So in the second property, what we want to look is that are humans aware of the limitations of the machine? For example, if you step into a self-driving vehicle, are you aware that they can make this kind of specific kind of errors that they might ask you to take over? So are you aware of this, or are you not over-trusting? There is this kind of things, appropriate trust. So it's not over-trusting, it's not under-trusting the system. So can you have appropriate measures of trust? People understand what system can be capable or not.
Do you think that humans that use some of these self-driving functions understand their limitations?
I'm sure there are people that do. But I mean, in general, you see a lot of hype. No. In general, say, there's a lot of hype saying that you see examples out there in news items, videos and stuff like this, that people just like misusing the systems, just say, okay, I don't care about this system, I'm just going to use it anyway. And that connects, for example, to ChatGPT as well, right? So what can ChatGPT do and what can it not do? So if you just get an advice, ask a random question to this, and are you going to follow the advice?
Yeah.
Even if it depends on your life, are you really going to do this? So maybe what should you be... what kind of things can these systems do or do not? But also, there is also the flip side, the other side, right? Because can agents, also this AI systems, understand what people can and cannot do?
So what would a self-driving car think about a human behind the wheel? What can a human do well? I think with the hiring, I think it's more easier. Yeah. I think with the hiring example, I immediately think, well, making the actual moral judgment or something, or having a feel for another person, that's something the AI could never cover.
I think on driving, we can also question a little bit some of the assumptions of how things are being developed right now, which they use the concept of traded control. So which means that either the car is in control or the human is in control. In sense of making the steering, deciding which the steering angles, when to brake, what to gas and everything. So, but there is an alternative way, which looks, for example, shared control, which you can humans and the automated agents do this together. So it means you should not let go of the system, but you do this, but maybe there's an animal crossing the road in which your response time is not good enough, so maybe the agent can intervene in this in order to make it safer for you.
Right, this feels actually, this is when you are in between, because I have driving lessons, when you're in between two of these strokes and it kind of corrects you a little bit, right? And the steering wheels automatically go a little bit back to the middle. That's what I felt. And then you can overrule it if you want, but it kind of helps you kind of to...
Yeah, this kind of system. So how we can do this, but in a way that people can still disagree, overrule, and be engaged at all times.
AI actually thinks that the capabilities of the humans are so important that it lets part of the control with humans.
Yeah.
Is it because of the capabilities, or is it because of the responsibility? Or is that
I think they're connected.
Okay. Because are humans better at car driving?
There is a lot of studies that argue, at least, that if we can automate everything, we can reduce accidents by so much. And some people even claim that there is then a imperative, there's a need, because if we do this, automate everything, then we're gonna reduce the overall number of accidents.
Yeah, much safer. Well, huh? let the AI do everything.
We should do, right?
How can AI remain in control of humans? That's the big question.
Yeah, the question is, if it goes wrong, and no one takes responsibility for this, is this something that it's desirable for us?
With the self-driving car, it's really about responsibility, which I agree with. Even though maybe the capabilities of a human sometimes lack in relation to the capabilities of a self-driving car.
Yeah, that's the thing. It shouldn't be a competition. That's the kind of thing that was the paradigm, that we should have a paradigm shift on AI development. It's not like these things like, I'm good at like, how can they complement each other?
Yeah, I agree. I was just wondering with the car driving, if there is something left that humans can do there better. Or is it maybe, I guess think, edge cases,
yes,
right?
Like, I think there is, because we are very good, for example, at pattern recognition. And just a few examples, we can recognize patterns really well.
Yeah.
So different words, if you go to a different country, you can understand a little bit how the rules change, the perspective, the social rules of the system. We can adapt.
Pretty slow, with a very little amount of data, actually.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, let's go to the third property. If a given person cannot do anything about what the AI system is doing, maybe it is not such a good idea to make this person responsible for whatever the system is doing. I like how you phrase this. This sounds very understandable language.
So, if you look in the paper, it's written in a different way, a little bit more fancier words. Yeah. But I mean,
maybe it's not such a good idea.
So the aspects here is about how can people disagree with these outcomes and do something about it? So we talk about that there's this idea of control authority. So you have the authority to control a given system. So, but sometimes you don't have the authority to do anything about it, but you still take some responsibility for the systems. So let's say if the system is fully automated driving, think about like an automated vehicle which you don't have a steering wheel. They remove the steering wheel. You cannot do anything about it.
Yeah.
How can you be held responsible for this if you really, there is nothing you could have done?
Yeah. And this is, of course, a difficulty with the steering wheel. Yeah. It's very clear. But I think at this moment, if you just use ChatGPT in something, you are still responsible for that. But I can also think, well, this human didn't really know what the bias of ChatGPT was. Yeah. And it's already on the market. This person who doesn't have an education in AI know what the problems would be.
Yeah, then it ties back to the property too. So that's why they all connect together, right? So that's, I mean, there is no clear mutual understanding of the capabilities and limitations from humans to AI, from AI to human.
Okay, but you're now talking about these edge cases where humans don't have any control. And before, it's about keeping the human in the loop, right? So will there always be cases where humans don't have any control? Or is your mission to have always some control of humans in there?
I think the research we try to do is to develop such systems, and including not only the technical aspects, but also the social interaction, but also looking at organizations and everything that allow for this kind of controls.
Mm.
Are there contexts and circumstances which this might not happen? Yes. And that's why you should think about it before, ahead of time. And maybe that's the kind of case that we discussed before, which maybe should not implement the systems.
Yeah. So yeah, exactly. And there will be, as I said, a lot of gray areas, right? Where it will be just complex to think of how much control does the human have, really?
Yeah. And these are the kind of things that's like also very hard to if you want to quantify these things, is always super hard.
Yeah, and people go for the default option, right? They go for what the and you can have some kind of control, but if the AI system in 99% of the case is right, like with this 3-hour ride, and then you have to pay attention for 3 hours, you won't, because you trust it at some point.
Exactly. Also, on my PhD research, I also look a lot with in the concept of bounded rationality and like this nudge, this whole idea from behavioral economics, how people make decisions. So there are so many cognitive biases that we use, and so the systems should also be aware of this, because of course it makes a difference. If I present you, like, think about the AI-based hiring again.
Yeah.
If I present you first the resume of person A and then B, it's different than presenting first B and then A.
Yeah.
That's already a bias there. So you are, so at least, of course, maybe you have to make a decision. You're going to present A or B, but it's a, you understand that there is an impact.
Oh, I can imagine that, but for example, you will be more likely to pay more attention to the first candidate, and then you will see that as the standard, and maybe later candidates you'll be less interested in. Something like that, right? Some kind of bias like that.
Yeah. There is even more than this. There's also like there's a lot of studies that show, I mean, that depending on the time of the day, right, which you get to make, if you make during before lunch, after lunch, your decision might be completely different.
Yeah. Okay, last principle, last property. AI systems need to be more transparent, so whenever something bad happens, and it will happen, we can understand what happened and learn from the mistakes. AI systems need to be more transparent. Okay, it's a pretty clear property. Actually, it's one that I think is more in the news already, right? Yeah. About transparency, about AI systems.
Yeah, and it's really hard, I mean, to do this, especially with all this kind of super data intensive, like deep learning systems. It's really hard.
Why is it hard?
Because there is usually so much data, and the inferences that are made, they are not so clear. Ask ChatGPT. Why is this giving you this answer instead of another answer? There's a set of infinite possibilities of answering to a given query. Why this one?
And you mean usually it can't answer that well?
It can answer something. But that's the thing. Is it really the reason before that? If you go analyzing a little bit how these things are done, how the systems are developed, it's very hard to pinpoint this. Because the systems are training on huge amounts of data, and each tiny part of data can have a small collaboration here, which is very hard to trace back. So you can, of course, there are ways to approach this. You can look into data ownership, you can look into use more transparent systems. There are some approaches which you could look into this. And also, and then from the human side, I would say that this property also tells us, so you can connect, but I would say they also tell us connect to a person that understand what's going on. Also then connects all properties together. So it's not only about connecting to a person, so that's like tracing back to a person, but also tracing to a person that can understand what is going on. Then.
So if the transparency of the algorithm is in terms of machine learning, we should have somebody who is knowledgeable about machine learning, right? And the transparency ideally would not only be in terms of machine learning, but much more in human concepts or values or norms.
Yeah, exactly. It's not only about the weights that you use to train a given system, but it's how, what are the impacts in the world, who designed this, there's a lot of other considerations you should be making on this.
Maybe finally there will be some more attention to the other side of AI, and not only the, what's called the subsymbolic side or the machine learning side, and more the knowledge-driven side, the more symbolic side.
Yes, that's a lot of super interesting research going on right now and trying to combine this, because there's a lot of impressive developments and research, of course, from deep learning. There's so many things that we never dreamt that would be possible doing this, and they're doing. But there are so many problems and challenges. So I guess that combining this kind of more good old-fashioned AI with symbolic, which you can represent, we can have some kind of even some safety considerations being literally explicitly expressed, that would help a lot also with the goals of keeping meaningful human control, with goals of first property, like having this kind of moral operation design domain. So that's a very interesting approach as well.
Nice. Okay, let's come back to the question. So the central question was, how can humans remain in control of artificial intelligence? Okay, I'm going to try to summarize, and you can always add something. What would we...
Meaningful, yeah.
How can humans remain in meaningful control of artificial intelligence? I simplified the question, but now that our audience is smarter and richer in knowledge, we can, of course, change it again. How can humans remain in meaningful control of artificial intelligence? We talked about those two use cases. We talked about tracking and tracing, but it comes down to four principles in the end. We need to define in which moral situations a given AI should or should not be used. Humans and AI should have some form of basic understanding of each other. If a given person cannot do anything about what the AI system is doing, maybe it's not such a good idea to make this person responsible for whatever the system is doing. We should just say not, right? Maybe it's not a good idea.
Yeah. It's definitely not a good idea.
Maybe. AI systems need to be more transparent, so whenever something bad happens, and it will happen, we can understand what happened and learn from the mistakes. Yeah, I think that's a very, very nice summary, and I think it made it much more concrete for me what it means for a human to be in the loop or for a human to have control over AI. So I really like this paper because it uses everyday examples, and yeah, the phrasing that you use is much more understandable than much things I read.
Yeah, thanks. And it's really, as I said, it's so we could only think about these problems by talking with, so there was like 2 years almost like from the initial discussions about this paper until we got to some agreements. So that would be, because let me rephrase. So basically, in order to achieve this, we have to work in a multidisciplinary team. So the first question was like, okay, what does it mean? What does AI mean to you? What does autonomy, what agency? There's a lot of different concepts we have to agree upon in order to reach this. So that's, but I so it's not such a, it's not a problem which you can solve from one perspective, I would say. And we did not solve anything, after all. We proposed properties, and we believe we took a step in the direction of making this a little bit more actionable. But I guess that the next step, which we are doing, a lot of people around the world are trying to do, is how do you put this in practice? How does that work in real-world systems? So we are doing also with AI tech, we're doing also an experiment on the driving scenario right now and try to get some measures and understanding of meaningful human control there. But there's a lot more to be done.
Well, that's all for you, listeners. yeah, thanks, Luciano. Oh man, that was fun. I think I mispronounced your name like 4 or 5 times in the whole podcast. Thanks. I think that's for me. Is there anything you want to add, or is there anything that that's left unspoken?
No, I think that's it. It was a nice conversation. Thanks for having me.
No problem.